So I am officially hooked to podcasting. Hey guys, welcome to the Super Tea Podcast. I love it. I love hearing myself. I love the microphone. Anybody who knows me personally knows that I love the microphone. And if you didn't know, well, I love the camera too, which is evident on all my social media sites because there's like literally thousands of pictures. I'm snapping all the freaking time. So my love for the mic comes from me being a singer and me loving to sing. And yeah, some things are happening there. I'm not going to go too deep, but I just wanted to give you guys a beef. Nope, I don't have a beef for you. Sorry. It's all love. This is a loving station. But I wanted to give you a brief description of me. So I'm super excited also because it's the month of May and I am born in the month of May. And in a few days, I will be officially 36 years old. Now, I know that my channel is on the social and cultural part of the network out there in the world of podcasts. So I know there's probably people who study different sciences such as numerology and astrology and things of that sort. So 36 is a big year, you know. I'm entering into a new cycle in my life. So I am super excited and I am fully supported while I am stepping into this new cycle because amazing things have been happening for the past few weeks, but they keep like intensifying as I get closer and closer. So I am really souped up. The fact that this platform is here, Anchor, is amazing within itself. You know, my best friend put me onto it. She has her own amazing podcast. Please search for her and listen to her. It is called I Am Enough, and she is just talking to people and also me being motivating, you know. And this is kind of how this idea was birthed. We talk to each other most daily, even though we live across the country from each other. Like, I'm all northeast and she's like right there to Mexico. And she does not support the wall and neither does I. Just had to put that out there. But anyway, yeah, we talk to each other, we motivate each other, and it was her idea like to do a podcast and motivate others. And I was like, oh girl, that's an excellent idea, you know. And so she invited me on one of her shows and we did a show together and it came out just amazing. And so I have the app. And so as the universe would be, I got a little notification up in the top of my phone today. And they're like, what are you waiting for? Record your podcast. And I'm like, oh, well, you know what? There is something on my mind. So let me record this freaking podcast out here for the people. So I did that. That was my first one. It's called Call to Action. And my next one was just like a brief 3-minute one. And this one, I'm just going to talk for as long as I feel like it. It's not going to be very long because I have things to do, like cook and do my vision board and get ready to go. And get ready. I have a date tonight, guys. Yeah. So anyway, background on me. I am a teen mom, which I'm not a teenager anymore, so I shouldn't say that I am a teen mom, but I was a teen mom. And I came from the inner city. I moved around a lot, but my humble beginnings started at 542 Marcy Avenue. All my people in Brooklyn. Is Brooklyn in the house? Maybe so, maybe not. But anyway, all my people in Brooklyn know exactly where that's at. That is the project development where also Jay-Z was raised at. He was on the other side, the Nostrand Inn. And anywho, I was exposed to a lot as far as in the community and culturally. as what I was classified as then as an African American. I don't identify as that right now, but that was the classification. And, you know, so that gives you just an idea of what that was like. Home was completely different. You know, home was very structured. My elder aunt, my grandfather's sister, had me from 6 months old till I was about 12. And she was very loving, but also very strict. So I wasn't even allowed to go play outside. I was allowed to go to school, which was right across the street, by myself after a certain age. But yeah, I wasn't allowed to go outside by myself. I only went to the store if she was outside with me. The religion that she practiced and that I had to practice because I was a kid in her home was Jehovah's Witnesses. So it gave me a good foundation in, I guess, learning how to not follow the crowd, because we just did not do what everybody else was doing. We didn't celebrate birthdays, Christmas, Easter, any holiday at all. We only had one, which was Memorial Day. Because I love to talk from a very long time and at a very young age, we would go and talk to people, random people. We would walk up to people with watchtowers and with awakes, and we would tell them the good news. And, you know, I kind of like that part, tell you the truth, you know, knocking on people's door. People weren't always receptive, but I'll tell you one thing, it prepared me for sales tremendously. You know, I had tough skin where I didn't care other people's opinions. My objective was what was the most important thing. And so, yeah, I did that. They have something called the ministry school, for those who are familiar with that particular religion, where you get up on stage in front of the whole congregation of people and you do little skits. They call it talks, you know, but really it's a skit, you know. So I was comfortable with getting on stage, you know, not singing on stage yet, but definitely I didn't mind getting up there and talking and doing theatrical things. So I am a lover of the arts, and I was really battling whether I should put my podcast under arts or social and culture. But I chose social and culture because I know that I'm going to be going into those things. So even though I may touch on the subject of arts briefly here and there, might even do a little song for you guys here and there, not today, but in the future, don't be surprised if you hear me singing on my podcast. But anywho, you know, so yeah, I chose social and culture, because yeah, that's what this is predominantly going to be about, you know. So again, going into my background, at 12, I went to go live with my mom, my birth mom, up in Harlem. So I went from Brooklyn to Harlem, and I'ma say this, ghetto is a ghetto, okay? I fought a lot in school, you know, I wasn't supposed to be fighting, but, you know, I mean, that's was the mode of operandi, you know. Somebody looked at me the wrong way, somebody said something to me the wrong way, I would pop, you know, and I was basically like that up until high school. And funny thing is that my mom ended up moving from the hood up in Harlem to which is kind of borderline still the hood, and it definitely is the hood now, but to a housing development on 93rd Street and 1st Avenue called Stanley Isaac Houses. So that school there, it was more, I went to PS 151, which they have torn down and made into condos, but that school was more diverse, you know, and there was some Caucasian people in there, you know, a lot of them, and I had the same popping mentality, you know what I'm saying? I was popping off. However, my grades all the way, I was in talented and gifted, like from first grade on until high school. So, yeah, high school, I went from honor roll to being a baby mama. So anyway, let me go back to what happened, because this was very pivotal in my life. And I know I just fucked up the word pivotal, not pivotable. I be adding syllables and letters, so bear with me. You guys get what the hell I'm saying and what I mean. So anywho, so yeah, I had a guidance counselor, and you know, she was like, why are you always fighting? You know, she just sat down with me, this Caucasian lady, and she was like, you like the top of the percentile. You're really smart. What's going on? Are you having problems at home? And I'm like, nah. Like, shoot, she was talking about me. So, you know, I had to punch in her face. And she's like, what? Like, people are going to talk about you all the time. Do you like to fight? I was like, I really don't like to do it, you know, but I ain't gonna let nobody, you know, just get over on me, you know? Like, I had that whole mentality, that hood mentality, you know, that was just ultra defensive all the freaking time for no reason, you know, that was seeking approval and validation all the freaking time, you know. Yeah, I have to call that a hood mentality. I won't say that it's an African-American mentality or even a Black mentality, because it's a mentality of poverty, and not just poverty in the sense of not having enough money, but just not having enough freaking real self-esteem, not having enough real self-worth. Like, why do people spend so much money to adorn the outside of their body when they feel like shit inside? Like, couldn't they use that money to invest into some self-development so they could feel good and then, you know, do something more responsible with their finance so they could generate more finance versus put themselves in debt by just buying shit to look good, to get other people's approval? Like, what is that about? That's about not having any true self-worth inside and looking for validation and building your self-worth based on outside people and outside opinions. So that was the mentality that I had, you know. And when she broke it down to me and told me that, she basically gave me a clue right then and there in the sixth grade, you know, that what other people think is really not important. What other people do is really not important. You know, how I feel is most important. So I considered that, and I was like, she got a point there, you know? So I calmed down a lot, even though I left the school with a bang because I had a quote unquote friend, which was a pet peeve of mine, who we were cool, but then she just started talking crap about me, and I got away from her, stopped being her friend, and then she wanted to befriend me again, even though she was talking crap, you know? So I was like, oh, you know what? I got something for you. So I had a good relationship with my mother at that point in time because I wasn't into the boy thing. And boy things changes things. But anywho, I told her what the guidance counselor had told me. And I told her about this girl. Her name is Waverly. I will never forget her name. And we had a mutual friend named Janelle, you know. And then I had a good friend named Diane, and we had graduated already, and we had a trip, and Waverly was talking shit about me, and I didn't appreciate it. So I had told my mom, and my mom, you know, she's had that mentality, that hood mentality. And so she was like, well, you know what, be her ass, but don't do it on school grounds, right? Because I don't want to hear no shit from that school. So I was like, cool, like, I got the okay, it's all good. Because you know, Mom Dukes, she's the authority, you know, fuck the principal, it's Mom Dukes. I don't live with the principal, you know. Principal is not gonna usher any ass whoopings. They gonna say some shit, they might impact the ass whooping, but if I get permission beforehand to whip somebody's ass, then therefore I don't gotta worry about whatever the principal say, because I already got permission, you know. So anyway, waited good and dandy, we coming back from the trip, I wait till we get across the street down the block from the school. And I'm like, so, we all laughing and shit. She got no idea. Bitch plotting. I was plotting. Plotting in my little young mind. So I was like, so, Waverly, are you been talking stuff about me? She was like, no. What you mean? I was like, I heard, like, I completely went from cheerful to beast mode, like, 3 seconds. I was like, I heard that you was talking shit. You said you was gonna beat my ass? Come on, beat my ass right now. So I popped, right? Popped on her real quick. She was like, I ain't say that. I said, if you hit me though, I'ma hit you back. But I ain't say I was gonna fight you. I ain't say that. So the other people that we're with, which is Diane and Janelle, they're just there. I think Farika was there too, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not quite sure though. I don't think Farika was in my elementary school. I think I met Farika once I went to this specialized junior high school, which I will get into in this podcast right here. So, anywho, it was just Diane and Janelle. So, Janelle was more kind of like on Waverly's side, you know. Janelle was from Brooklyn, Waverly was from Jamaica, and Diane was a Caucasian girl from Harlem, okay. So, Diane was kind of more my friend, you know. I think she was actually my bestie in elementary school, you know. So, anywho, man, so Waverly's saying her little piece, you know, trying to back out of the confrontation that I just put right there in front of her. And next thing I know, I popped her, like, I hit her. So, when I hit her, you know, I backed up because I'm a fair fighter, you know. I don't like pick up chairs and all this other extra shit. Like, my hands back then were real good, you know, so I didn't have to do that. And then, you know, when my hands didn't, if I couldn't reach you, I was charging, you know. If you was bigger, you know, I'm coming, you know. Either way, we going down. We both going down. If I'm on top of you, whatever, or if I can get you down before me, whatever, it's going down. That's how it was, you know. So, she did something really weird. She was the first person I'd seen to do this. Another individual did something very similar after I was an adult, like in my 20s. It was funny as fuck. So, what she did was, so after I hit her and stepped back, you know, like, you know, I'm squared up, I'm ready, let's go blow for blow. She bent down. I don't know what that was. Like, why would you expose your head even further into the person who just popped on you? Like, that didn't make any sense to me. But when she bent down, I took the opportunity to grab her head and put her in a headlock and commence to pounding with my other hand. Janelle, who I thought was her friend, she didn't care. She just loved the actions. She, you know, she gave me an umbrella to try to hit her with. My silly behind took the umbrella, tried to hit her with it, ended up hitting both of us at the same time because that's how close she was. I mean, she was literally in a headlock underneath my arm. She bit the shit out of me. I think that scar has finally healed, but I had the ultimate bite. Like, she bit me like she was biting a piece of fucking chicken right in my freaking left titty. And I just was plummeting till they pulled us apart. Then she went to her mom's job and I went home. And, you know, like, we graduated, school year's over. We had like maybe a day or two left. We was coming from a trip, but it still got back to the school what had happened. And I seen her, she didn't really look good at all, you know. And the school was infuriated, and, you know, the mom was saying she was gonna press charges, but she ended up not doing it. And I didn't get in trouble with my mother, but that was like my last just bullshit fight, basically, in school. I had some other ones, but I think they were warranted, you know, because people actually challenged me, you know. But that one, I kind of started that one, you know, even though in my mind back then, she provoked me because she was talking shit about me and she was my friend. How could my friend talk shit about me? Like, a random person, okay, you get away with that. I don't know you, we ain't cool. But my friend, like, we cool, we just sat and ate lunch together, we ain't talked about all these different things and stuff, and you gonna actually go behind my back? Like, I didn't even tease her when she was coming to school with her pits funky. Like, come on. Like, I was your friend. We wasn't besties like me and Diane, but I was really cool with her, and I was really hurt. I was really hurt when I found out she was talking shit about me. How can my own friend talk shit about me, you know? So I felt like she deserved to get ass whooped for that, you know. So that's what happened. City Hoop went off to junior high school. So, because I was always in the high percentile in my grades with the citywide test, I got the opportunity to go to a specialized junior high school, which also went up to high school. And the name of that school is called School of the Future. It's located in the Chelsea area, downtown Manhattan, right across the street from Baruch College, 23rd Street and 22nd Street in Lexington Avenue. I was in for a culture shock because now I'm here with all these different students from all these different diverse backgrounds, and it was unfamiliar to me, you know. Although I believe we had a black vice principal, and I can't call her name right now, and the work was easy, you know. It was just culturally, it was a culture shock for me, you know, but I was there, so I stayed there. So my first year there, I ended up having an accident. I used to take the number 10 bus. My mother had moved from Stanley Isaacs back up to Harlem. Now she was on 151st between 8th and Bradhurst. So I would take the 10 bus that runs on 8th Avenue all the way down to 23rd Street, because she did not want me on the train at all. Like, it was very strict. I was not allowed to get on the train. So I took the bus all the way there, and then I would take the 23 crosstown to school. So one winter morning, I was going and I slipped over a sheet of ice and obstruction in the street. It wasn't a hole in the street. It was actually like a hump. So it was like maybe it was a hole and they poured too much asphalt, whatever they used to fill up the holes, and it created a hump. So I went to go step over the hump crossing 23rd, and down the 10 bus used to go past 42nd, I don't think, oh, past 59th at that time. Now it doesn't go past 59th Street. So at that time, what would happen is it would end up on 7th Avenue. So start on 8th Avenue, 151st Street, but by the time I got to 23rd Street, I would be on 7th Avenue and 23rd. So anyway, I was crossing the street so that I can go to the 23 crosstown, and I slipped and fell. And when I slipped and fell, my complete right hip popped out of my pelvis and my left hip slipped some. So two guys rushed over and helped me up. And when they helped me up, I tried to walk, and the pain was excruciating. Mind you, I've had two natural births since then, and still have never felt anything like that. And I just couldn't move. And NYPD, like, in a matter of seconds was there. I don't even know how they got there, because they didn't call. They was like riding by, and the guy seen them and flagged them down. So they stuck me in the back of the cop car, and they brought me to St. Vincent's Hospital, which no longer stands. It's weird how a lot of things that were like tragic or whatever, like the buildings, they don't even exist anymore. You know, I'm not saying that the elementary school was a tragic thing, you know, but I mean, that incident with the girl at the end of the school year was kind of intense, you know what I mean? And that building's not there, and St. Vincent Hospital is where I had my surgeries at, and they don't exist neither anymore. So it's a little ironic, you know, but anywho, they brought me there. They did surgery the same day. They did both of my hips the same day, put pins in it, and leveled them up, and sent me to New York Foundling Hospital for my rehabilitation. I was in a wheelchair for about a month. I had to learn how to walk again and everything, and that experience just gave me a bigger outlook on life itself. There were other children there, but there were children there my age and younger, you know, who had permanent, you know, conditions like cerebral palsy. One little girl had a stroke, you know. I mean, some of them had MS, you know, where they were wheelchair bound just indefinitely, you know, and they were there either awaiting a home, or they were there because they had no home, you know. So they had a whole different type of experience. And one of my best friends in that place was called Shirley. I don't remember exactly what Shirley's condition was, but I know she was in a electric wheelchair, and she couldn't, well, so they say, she couldn't control her arms, and she couldn't walk. Well, she could walk, but she couldn't control, like, her muscles and stuff. She would have spasms, and the only thing she had, like, real good control over was her head. So the way her wheelchair was made was that it had these two things on the side of her head, and she would, like, lean her head to the side to, like, turn it, and lean her head on the other one to, like, back up and stuff like that. She basically would control the chair like that, and she could speak, but not clear, but I understood her, and we were cool. we had a connection, and we were definitely cool, you know. And at that time, like junior high school is when I started having my crushes and stuff like that. So me and her, like if a cute guy would come in, either to volunteer or like a family member's of a resident there came to visit them, we would like holler and look at each other and just have a whole lot of fun. The lessons I learned there, you know, was that even though a person is different, doesn't mean that, you know, their emotions and their feelings are not valid, you know? Like, they like the same things I like. You know, like Shirley was attracted to guys just as I was attracted to guys. You know what I'm saying? You know, we had fun. We laughed. You know, if somebody was rude or nasty, like nobody liked it. You know what I'm saying? Not me, not Shirley. You know, it's just how we was. And some of the kids was rude. You know, like Shirley smacked the shit out of this one girl. She was a Spanish girl. I forgot what her issue was, but she was in a wheelchair too. And she just had this funky ass attitude. And she would just be talking shit. So we had video games and stuff like that. They gave us school while we was there and stuff. And we were just all in one room playing a video game. And she just started talking shit. And Shirley just looked at her. And next thing I know, that arm flew. Floop. She smacked the shit out of her. I do not know what that girl said to Shirley. She said some foul ass fucking shit to her, and she smacked the holy shit out of the girl. And the girl started wailing. The staff came running, and Shirley just started having convulsions, which I think she did on purpose to make it seem as if it was out of control. And the girl knew it was on purpose. I knew it was on purpose, and Shirley knew it was on purpose, but nobody else was the wiser of it. And it was hilarious, man. It was hilarious. We had a lot of good times. And on my right side, they operated again, but I didn't stay at the facility after the second operation. I actually went home, and I was walking with crutches, and I would go back and forth to the doctor. They would see, you know, how the pins were, this, that, and the other. And I got tired of the crutches, you know. So I just stopped, like, after a couple of weeks, I stopped using them. And I had a very noticeable limp. And, I mean, the people who know me personally, you may see a slight limp here and there, depending. And actually, right now, I just recently had another accident, like about 2 years ago, another slip and fall, ironically. And this one basically aggravated the old injury, and they want to do complete full hip replacement. So I'm seeking alternative measures because I'm not looking to go underneath the knife. At all, you know. But anyway, back to my humble beginnings. I ended up going back to School of the Future. I graduated from School of the Future, got accepted to 4 high schools, Brandeis, Maxwell, Seward Park, and back to School of the Future. So School of the Future went up to high school. I mentioned that earlier. So my silly behind, you know, I was feeling, I don't know what the proper word is, but I was like feeling just awkward, not, you know, going from the hood every day into Midtown. And like, it was just a culture shock every day, you know. And I wanted to be near what I was used to, you know, which is just hood, you know. And I was open to possibilities, but those possibilities my mother wasn't open to. So since we stayed in Harlem, she just refused for me to go to Maxwell, which was the school I wanted to go to because it was all the way in Brooklyn. And she was like, if I don't go back to School of the Future, then I'm going to go to the closest school to the house, which was Brandeis. And I didn't know anything about Brandeis. She didn't know anything about Brandeis. You know, like, we didn't do that where you look and go to the high schools and, you know, see what they're like, see what the environment is before choosing a school. And I encourage, if there is any parents that are listening or any students that are listening, that you do that, that you don't don't just look at the book and see what it says, because the book is going to make the school seem like it's everything. You need to physically and see what that is about, you know, see what the environment is about. Because when I say culture shock, I was in for the shock of my life when I made it to freaking high school. They had fucking metal detectors there, and I was like, what the fuck? Why are there metal detectors in my school, you know? So again, you know, that's when I lost my virginity. It was not to somebody in the school, but I had formed a little group, and my little group, you know, all of my groups were kind of silly, you know, now that I think back and I'm recollecting and sharing with you guys my background and my history. All of my freaking groups were silly as fuck. We just loved to laugh, and we would laugh and joke and laugh and joke and laugh and joke, you know. And so I had another little group. This one, my bestie, her name was Nicole. She was from St. Nicholas Projects. And so we just would laugh and joke and laugh and joke. We were kind of like the awkward girls who were always laughing. You know, I was not one of the cool kids at all. Definitely the awkward crowd that just was always snickering and funny. Borderline nerd. But once I got to high school, I kind of dropped my nerdiness and, you know, traded it in just for extra laughs, you know. So that's when I also, this is ninth grade, started, was introduced to marijuana. So we would cut school, we go to Nicole's grandmother's house, smoke weed. I met her cousin named Gerard, and yeah, that's who got the cherry. That was not my baby daddy, though. Not my baby daddy. So once the cherry was popped, it was over. It was a done deal. I was like, oh, this is life now. This is life. I don't know what school is. I don't know what anything is. This is life. So yeah. I got around a little bit, you know, a little bit. And because my body was developed, you know, like older guys were talking to me and stuff. And long story short, I was like 14 dating a guy that was 24. And he was sneaking into my bedroom window. And my mom caught him there one time. We was drinking 40s, St. Ives 40s. Oh, God. I don't think I would drink a 40th white baby. Maybe if they paid me enough, but I was drinking malt fucking liquor. And yeah, I got caught. I don't know if we'll go into the details of how I got caught. It was kind of funny looking back at it, and it's stupid. Because, you know, as a kid, you really think that your parents is not paying attention to shit. And she was, you know. I think, no way I'm in the same house with her smoking weed, even though I'm by the front door and she ain't smelling a damn weed. You understand? But in my little kid mind, I thought she was smelling weed because the window was open and stuff. And I had a little lock on the door. So then to make it even worse, I had another friend, because I was still going to the Kingdom Hall. My mother wasn't going, but she was making me go. And I had a friend named Rachel, and I was telling Rachel about my boyfriend and stuff. And Rachel went and snitched on me, and her mom called my mom. My mom's like, oh no, not in my house. So I think at one point, I know how I was getting away with it. You know how I was getting away with it? It would be people in the motherfucking hallway smoking weed. So if she did smell it, I would say it was them outside in the hallway, because my bedroom was literally right next to the front door. That's how I was doing it. Remember, I was stupid, but I wasn't that stupid. I had a little plan, but mama was smarter. So once my old friend snitched on me, my mom was like, oh hell no, I'm about to take this lock off the door, you know. So she took my lock off the door, and you think I would have said, you know what, don't come back again ever. But no, I was like, you know, don't come back for about a week or two. And he's like, okay. And then he started coming back, and it was so weird. It was one of those tenement buildings where, even though he's on the first floor, it was like a level down, you know, because we were like on top of the basement. So for him to get in, he would go underneath the stairs on the first floor, go outside the door, and like scale the banister from the steps to get to my window. Now, my window did not was not just over the ground. It was like a whole nother floor there, you know? So it was almost like I was on the second floor, you know? So anyway, so this is what's happening or whatever. This particular night or whatever, he came in and my mom came to use the bathroom. Like, oh shit, go hide, you know? So he went and hid, but he left his shoe in plain sight. So she came in there like, what you doing in here? You smoking some weed in here, Tucker? And she seen the shoe. And I was like, oh shit. So she saw the shoe. It's like, it was done. You know, I tried to lie my way through it. And homeboy had balled himself in the most smallest ball I've ever seen a human being ball themselves into. But she found them. And my mom was a large lady. Love her, love her, love her. God rest her soul. But she found him and he tried to, she was like, oh hell no. And he tried to escape through the window and she pushed him. It was a horrible thing. But she pushed him out the window. And next time I seen them, his foot was the size of a football. It was that large and swollen, you know. And I actually got the boot that night too, you know. Like, she literally at that point in time had a nervous breakdown, you know. She had experienced a lot of stuff when she was younger. My grandma passed away. She was 9. My grandfather remarried to a woman. This woman abused my mom, and her sons also abused her. So my mom had went through a lot of trauma, which is why I was with my eldest aunt the first part of my life, you know. So she just like had a nervous breakdown, threw me out the daggone house. Like, who throws their 14-year-old daughter out into the street in the middle of the night? You know what I'm saying? It's like, you just took me and put me for all the predators to get me. And they were there. They were waiting, you know, like, hey, come here. It's okay, you know. So I went to this guy's house around the corner or whatever, because I didn't have anywhere else to go. And he wanted to make me his living sex toy. And I really wasn't feeling him like that. He wasn't all that cute. And, you know, I just, that wasn't a lifestyle for me. So I ended up going to the police station, seeking help. And they were like, well, what happened? I was like, well, she put me out. I don't know where to go. I don't know what to do. And they were like, well, you gotta go back home. So they brought me home and they told her, ma'am, you cannot put your child outside in the street. You're responsible for her. Da da da. So she ended up going into a hospital because, like I said, she had a nervous breakdown. I didn't know that at the time, but I found that out after she went into the hospital and everything. And went to go stay with some of her lesbian friends, and you know, that was a whole experience, you know, because I always wrote. I started writing in junior high school. I had this wonderful math teacher who encouraged me to start a journal, and from there I have not stopped writing. So you know, I had journals about different stuff that was happening and stuff like that. And I know my mother would sneak and read my journals, so I wanted to leave them over at her friend's house. Why did I feel I could trust these women? I don't know, because they were her friends, but they seemed to be trustworthy. So I left some books over there, and they went through it, read it, and then told my mom what the hell was in the books. And then this is after my mom came out the hospital. It was like the day she came out of the hospital. And I came home. Well, it was not the day that she came out, but it was the day that I came home. And I got ass whooping like on site, you know, when I got home. And it was so just intense and extreme. It wasn't like regular belt to the ass, you know what I'm saying, or spoon to the ass or legs, whatever the spoon or belt or extension cord would catch. It was her getting down on the ground and like choking me and like saying, you lucky I've been to jail before, I would end it right here. So I was scared shitless, you know. She was just really upset and basically disciplining me in what was acceptable at that point in time, for me disobeying her and not bringing all of my belongings back with me home. But I was like, oh shit, like, she just threatened my life. So what I did was, when I went to school the next day, I told my guidance counselor, and I literally had like marks on my neck behind it. So when I shared this with her and she seen the marks, she was like, okay, I'm gonna need you to come see me after school, you know, don't go home. Everything is gonna be okay. So when she said that, like, flags started going off and stuff, and I got like really concerned, you know. So I still go into my classes, but I guess, I mean, even now, my facial expression shows my emotions. I'm working on that, people, but it still shows it. So she saw my facial expression and she ordered the security guards to make sure I didn't leave the building and shit. So, you know, I had an accident, so it wasn't like I could really run anywhere any freaking way. Like, after the accident with my hips, it was like my track days were over. When I was in Brooklyn, I ran track, you know. I think even right before the accident in elementary school, I ran it a couple of times, but it was over. High school, it was a done deal. It wasn't happening, you know. Only way I could try to do was trying to sneak out where they couldn't see me and walk vigorously. Hope they wouldn't catch me. But they were at both exits of the classrooms, you know. So there was no way. So Nicole, Nikki, what we call for short, my bestie back then in high school, whose cousin popped the cherry, she stayed with me. She stayed with me all the way after school. I think she even got in trouble with her grandma, you know, but she stayed with me until some people came and picked me up. And those people came and picked me up is when things just got very interesting in my life. I was in foster care for a few years, well, basically until I aged out. So from 14 until 18, a week before my 18th birthday, I left at 17, right before my 18th birthday. At that point, me and my mom had already reconciled. My firstborn was born. I got pregnant with him at 15. I had him at 16. I met my baby father. He lived over the foster mother's home. Once the foster mother, her name was Sonia Francis, found out that I was pregnant, she demanded that I got an abortion, and he also wanted me to get an abortion, but I didn't. The reason why I didn't is because I just knew that this child that was growing in my stomach was special, you know. And I had already started my prenatal appointments. I was very responsible with going to the doctor and, you know, making sure everything is good and cool and everything. I was been like that since I became sexually active, you know. And so, anywho, I refused to do it, you know, and she pressured me a lot to do it, and I wouldn't fold, you know. And when I refused to do it, she told me that she was gonna put me out, and I told her I don't care, you know. So she made some phone calls, and I ended up going to a place called Rosalie Hall that's located in the Bronx. And I was there until I gave birth, you know. And I gave birth to this healthy, beautiful baby boy. He's 9 pounds, 1 ounce. And he just was another pivotal, I said it again, I put a B in there, pivotal, whatever, you know. Life just was different from that day forth for me, you know. Now I'm a mommy, and, you know, even though I was a young mommy, I took being a mommy very serious, you know. And so I made a lot of sacrifices. A lot of other things happened, which I'm not going to share on this podcast, you know. But I got married very young, to a guy twice my age. He's abusive. I stayed in it for like 6 years, moved around, and, you know, started, got divorced at 27, had another child named Nasia. She went to a diabetic coma, another just life-changing event, and spent years just healing and rebuilding from the ground up, you know, to get to where I am today, a couple of days from my 36th birthday. And so I've went back to school. I dropped out, of course, when I first became a mommy, went back, got my GED, went to college, dropped out of college, went back to college, dropped out again, went back to college, and now I have two semesters before I graduate. Will I go back for those two semesters? I don't know. I kind of want to, just for the experience, and I kind of feel like I don't need to because all these other monetary options are opening up to me. I might just do it for the heck of it, you know? Who knows? But anywho, you know, that is my background, you know, and so for me to be who I am today and to be where I am today and with the mentality that I have today, I had to do a lot of self-development and a lot of self-work, and it's still a work in progress. I don't feel that you ever stop working on being a better person, you know what I'm saying? For me, I feel like when I'm 80, I'm still going to be doing things to develop myself and develop my character. Although it will be solid, and it is solid now, you know, it's just like, you know, learning new things and being better and, you know, helping others do the same, you know, and using the gifts and the talents to do that, you know. So, yep, that's basically me, you know, that's my background, you know. I am a woman of substance and of experience, so even though turning 36, which may sound very young to some of you people, as I've shared, I've had a lot of major life experiences which I have learned from and have gathered wisdom from. So I have a lot of good substance to provide you guys and good content to provide you guys and encouragement, because if I can be who I am with the mindset that I have today, then that means that anyone else that's experiencing any challenges similar or any challenges at all, that you can too, you know. And I look to other people who have like extreme physical restrictions, you know, people who have like no legs at all playing sports professionally, you know. So I mean, imagine the drive and the pull and the push they have within them, you know. The human spirit is phenomenal, and it allows you to do pretty much anything you put your mind to. So with that being said, be encouraged. Thank you so much for listening and joining me on Super Tea Podcast. You guys have a wonderful day, and I'm gonna get the hell up off of this daggone podcast and get some shit done, because I gotta run and get off to enjoy my wonderful, wonderful Saturday. So again, thank you, listeners. I appreciate you. If you have any comments, any questions, definitely shoot it to me through my Facebook account, Lady Bay, LADI space BEY. Until next time, stay great, stay awesome, stay amazing, and be encouraged. Again, thank you guys so much. Love you. Talk to you soon. Not my typical welcome, 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 right? There's so many things that's on my mind. However, welcome, welcome, welcome to the Super Tea Podcast Show. So, I guess my first podcast show is going to be on Europeans here in America. With the current administration of Donald Trump, there has been a lot of emotions that were tucked down and hidden and, you know, not on the forefront, that have come up. With the administration of Donald Trump, he has served as a catalyst of change. And a lot of suppressed fears of the Europeans here, the descendants of Europeans here in America, has come to the surface. And it has caused a lot of tension between the Europeans and the descendants of the Europeans and the indigenous people. Now, one of the issues at hand is that the indigenous people are just becoming aware that they are indigenous people, and the Europeans are scared out of their minds about that fact, because they realize that they are truly the immigrants here. And I feel that the whole campaign on building a wall to separate the Americas, because Central America, South America, is still a part of America, as well as, you know, is still a part of North America. North America, Central America, South America, they're all the Americas, you know? And I feel that that's where that whole campaign is coming from. It's coming from a place of fear, because, you know, the indigenous people there, they're fully aware that they are indigenous people. You know, they don't believe that they're anything but that because their culture is centered there. You have so many sacred sites there, temples where the energy is just strong and powerful, and, you know, they know. So I believe that's why the Trump administration wants to build that wall. However, back to the fears and the tension that is between the two nationalities or the two ethnicities. I want to be as politically correct as possible with what I'm saying, and I'm not going to use the titles that are given by society. I want to be as accurate and as correct, because correct is being accurate, as possible. So, people that are commonly labeled as Black were once labeled as Afro-American, was once labeled as colored people, and now they are labeled as African-American. And we know that America is a continent and Africa is a continent. They are not countries, so they cannot, that cannot be an accurate title for a group of people. So who are we? We are the beginning of civilization. We are the first people that begin to civilize the people here on Earth. And I'm not going to go into the different theories of where we came from and how we got here, but we definitely brought civilization. That's something that is unarguable, that we did that. Our ancestors did that. You know, and I can see why, you know, Europeans can be afraid, you know, because they so much wanted our powerful blood in their veins, and some have achieved it, and those who have achieved it and knowingly achieved it to accomplish great things have went to accomplish these great things. I'm going to get really, really sensitive and even bring up the Queen of England and how they even were able to establish the monarchy over there, because it was with the sacred blood of an indigenous man, indigenous woman rather, that it began with. And now they have another indigenous woman over there so that they can continue, because it got watered down. Quite frankly, it got watered down, you know. But I feel like this indigenous woman that they brought over there now, she's going to change the whole shit. She's going to change the whole shit when the old lady finally passes away, because she's going to pass away eventually. I don't care what she's doing to try to maintain herself and her youth and whatever. She's probably have the best of the best of doctors, the best of the best of whatever technology she can find to keep herself up and breathing. She's going to go. You know what I'm saying? And when she's gone, this new woman is going to be in her place. This new woman who is of indigenous blood and background, and the husband that she has, who is Princess Diana's son. Oh, there is just a matter of time. It is only a matter of time. You're going to see drastic changes in the world within the next 20, 50 years. So remember that I said this back in 2019, because it's really going to be drastic. 2030 is going to be like completely different than what it is now. And that's why so many things are coming to the forefront. And, you know, I can see why things are the way that they are, you know, and for that reason, I see the bigger picture. For that reason, I purposely disconnect myself from the media. I purposely disconnect myself from certain things. However, certain things are inescapable. And with my experiences I experienced yesterday, I felt like this is something to talk about with compassion. You know, although I was aggravated yesterday over the experiences, I realized what they really are. And, you know, I want to express compassion, you know, compassion to the indigenous people, number one, you know, who are realizing who they are. who know, because they've been lied to for centuries. Could you imagine being lied to for centuries, told that you're a second class citizen, told that you don't deserve this, you don't deserve that, when you are actually the most powerful of the human race on the planet? How your body is, I mean, all of human bodies are electromagnetic, but how your body can process energy, receive energy from the sun, because we're powerful, you understand? And to be told that we're not, and to forget that we're so powerful, and then now to realize, oh my God, we were lied to. Of course, there is going to be some anger there. There's going to be some anger there. There is going to be a lot of emotions. There's going to be a lot of hurt. There's going to be a lot of pain, and there's has to be healing. Indigenous people, we have to heal, because guess what? We are a big part of the solution. We cannot pump poison into our bodies and the through what we watch, through what we listen to, that lowers our vibration to the food that we consume. We cannot do that and expect to be a solution, because we are the solution. And in order for the solution to be something that's healthy and something that is really going to affect positive change, we have to be healthy. In order for us to be healthy mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, we have to do the healing. We have to do it. Nobody's not going to do it for us. You know, nobody's not going to do it for us. We got to do it. So anyway, this is my friend texting me, so forgive me because I didn't put it on what you call it, and that's a whole other topic that I'm gonna get into. But I appreciate him because he's a catalyst also. So anywho, oh, he's gonna call in the middle of my podcast. Guess I'm gonna have to talk to you guys later.